And so, yes, we have Susan Hull-Bostwick on the phone calling. She's the executive director of the Berkeley Psychic Institute. And hello, Susan. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Oh, great. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Hi, that's Berta Lee. She's co-hosting with me today.
Excellent.
So, well, thank you for coming on. Now, you are at a retreat right now?
Yes, I am. Huh? We have a, I guess we've been doing it for about 25 years in this location. We're up in Conocti this weekend, and we call it Lady of the Lake. It is a women's weekend of healing, and so we call it the Spiritually Centered Woman Heals Herself, and we do lectures and workshops and all kinds of rituals and ceremonies to enhance the spirit.
Hmm. That sounds awesome.
I think Berta Lee wants to be
there
right now.
Okay, you can come.
Does this go on for several days?
Well, yes. We used to do it over, well, first we started with workshops, and then women said, well, can we do this for a weekend? We said, okay, and then they wanted to add another day, and now it's 5 days.
Oh, wow.
it's a space of rejuvenation and spiritual renewal of women being in an environment with women to basically heal each other and validate each other.
That just sounds fabulous.
And we also do a lot of pampering. I mean, I must say that the Dancing Spring Spa really does help.
Wow. Yeah. Nothing like pampering and healing and together. Going into the energy of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's go back in time.
Sure.
How did you get involved? What brought you into this field and into psychic healing and clairvoyance? What was it that that made it happen for you?
Well, I was a young lady. I was probably 27, maybe earlier, maybe younger. I'm not quite sure. I haven't counted the years. When you get a certain point, you stop doing that.
Right.
But I was on a search. I had gone through two things that sort of made me aware of something was going on. I was getting a divorce, number one, and that was really a result of a lot of changes in my personal and spiritual life as well. And I had been ill, and it was a kind of an illness that I had learned and accepted and adapted to living with. I was chronically ill over about 18 years. And so I decided that I needed to look at it. Like, why am I taking these drugs?
Mm-hmm.
It started when I was 11 years old.
Wow.
And so it sort of woke me up, and I went, wait a minute. I'm taking these pills all the time, and really hadn't even thought about it. It became such a part of my life. And so I went on a search. I went to psychics and got readings. They told me things, and I tape recorded them and wrote in my journal for... I started in 1970 when this epiphany happened, and it continued. A lot of things sort of synchronistically occurred along that path. And people, one of the psychics said to me, well, you could be sitting here reading me. And I remember my eyes popping open and going, you've got to be kidding. And that was, and she wasn't. She was like 45 years old. And I was this, you know, young 20, late 20-something, trying to figure out who I was. And it really shook me that, you know, because the word psychic was for other people.
Mm.
That didn't have anything to do with me at that point in my life. I was busy trying to achieve and attain.
Right, right. That was definitely a move that wasn't anticipated, yeah.
Right.
Kind of a curve.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it was. And so, but, you know, these things wake us up, and what happens is we either pay attention to these little messengers or we don't. And this was my time to wake up, and all kinds of things started to happen after that. I just basically was I had a girlfriend, and she was had gone to teaching school with me. I'd been through a credential program, and we'd shared lots of stories about teaching together, and she'd gone off to Canada, and she came back and said, you know, you've been going to all these psychics and stuff. I need somebody to get me a reading. I said, okay. I called the lady I'd been going to, and she said, no, I'm busy. Why don't you try this place over in Berkeley? There's this man over there, and his name is Lewis. And check it out. So she gave me a phone number, and I called my girlfriend. I said, well, you can't see my psychic, so you got to go over here. And that was the beginning, because it was a place in Berkeley where Lewis Bostwick was training trance mediums. These are people who have the ability to channel. And he was also training people how to use their psychic abilities, who were very sensitive to energy. And he was doing readings. He was teaching his students how to read the aura. So I sent her over there. And that was the beginning of my journey, as I went over there as well and checked it out. And I'm still here.
And you have the same name.
That was such a coincidence.
Yes. I was Susan Hull. And when I went there, I had just finished a relationship, and so I was not in the mood for anything. And it just happened. I met this man that was forming things, and I took classes, but I didn't meet him. And he was sort of inconsequential to my journey. And that speaks a lot for him, in that his people, his teachers, were so capable that I was very fixated on learning the lessons in their classes. And then I met him, and it went, oops. Oh, no, here we go again.
There's the roller coaster coming along again.
Oh, boy, it's been 36 years of a roller coaster.
Oh. The e-ticket ride, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what happened was that I took a class, and the wheels started to turn, and the things started to accelerate on a psychic level, things that I never would have imagined. I started to see things in a different perspective that I had seen before. And let me put it this way real simply. It's like, have you ever seen something in the peripheral of your vision and wondered, did something just move there?
Right.
It seems to be kind of a common experience, and those things happened to me quite a bit, and I'd actually had a couple of apparition experiences, but, you know, when those things happen and you're by yourself, you just sort of zip it up because someone's going to think you're crazy.
Right.
So I did have a couple of those types of experiences, but I just wrote them in my journal and would read them again, wondering if I was going nuts. And then when I went to this place in Berkeley, which eventually got named the Berkeley Psychic Institute, I was told that that was normal, and oh, another oops. And so more of them became real to me, and I began paying attention instead of going, I didn't see that.
Allowing yourself to see it. Yeah.
Yes, I did. So more and more clairvoyant experiences happened to me, and as I allowed them to happen and were less frightened of them, I began to accept that, wow, is this really normal? And I have discovered over my studies there and with many thousands of readings and teaching of people that it is normal, and we're all psychic.
And normal is, well,
right.
What is normal?
Well, you know, Bertalee, a friend of mine says normal is a curable disease.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. I used to think, I don't know if I would trust anybody who thought they were normal. But I know what you're saying about the seeing something inexplicable, and how, in my experience, when that's happened, I've caught myself not registering it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just not even registering it, and then going, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
What did I just, you know, experience here?
Right.
But it made me think that perhaps things like that are happening to us on a much more regular basis than we let ourselves register.
I think you're exactly right. the more people I teach who are sort of becoming conscious or becoming aware, they're revealing these little secrets about themselves that they've, you know, like, well, they said, well, when I was a kid, I used to have a little spirit guide friend, but my mom told me not to talk about it. So, but it doesn't go away. You're 30, 40 years old, and it's your hidden secret. And when you open up, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, I can now allow myself to be more conscious, more aware.
Is there regret, though, for that all that lost time of not having it closer?
I don't think so, because I think that there's a divine order to this. I really do. That there's something we have to go through in this other reality called the real world that needs to be done. It gives us compassion, if nothing else. It teaches us things. Quite sure all of them, but I do know it teaches us things.
So just to give an example, say what was something that you saw back when you were just beginning to get that realization, you know, what was coming to you?
Well, I had a couple. One that I hid was actually having a Christ experience, which was very poignant. I was just in my country house. It was a house I had bought and was in transition about going to live there or stay in the city and work and you know, what I was going to do with it since I was going through a divorce. So I was there trying to figure out what to do with it, and I remember walking into this room, and there was this apparition, what I call now, but it was as clear as I'm speaking to you, a Christ energy, the second time I've seen something like this. The first one I saw in, I think it was 1965 or 66, driving down Highway 5, and that was easy to dismiss because my husband at the time thought it was hooey that somebody was playing with lights in the sky. And so we had to file that away with, you know, some stupid trickster person. But so both of those got filed away until I started to really go on my search. And then a child appeared in my kitchen in San Francisco. I was a school teacher, and she revealed to me myself as a child, and it was very, very real and very frightening. I was by myself again. It was like, wow, there's nobody here to witness this or even talk about it, so maybe it didn't happen. But it did. I sat immediately down and wrote down what I saw and what she told me. And then I went to the Berkeley Psychic Institute and said, could somebody look at this for me? Am I nuts? And they said, no. Spirits do appear to people. So that was one of them. I think the one that shook me to making the decision to really pursue my psychic abilities was I was taking a healing class, learning how to do what we call psychic healing. It's a space really to learn how to heal yourself first and how to not give away your life force energy to somebody else who needs healing, but how to use special psychic protection tools and techniques to give healing to somebody else. And I was seeing things in this class, and every class I kept seeing the same things, and I finally got brave enough by the fourth class to ask the teacher, why did every person he asked us to work on a healing level have these spoked wheels inside their body spinning? I said, do these people old car freaks? That was to my teacher. It's just that I'm seeing a rash of old car freaks, people who like old cars, and I'm seeing these spoked wheels that look like old cars. And he said, no, those are just chakras. Well, the chakra is literally a vortex of energy inside the body that spins, and he taught us about them, but I didn't know one could actually see them. That turned me around big time. I went, holy moly. I can see inside the body? Wow.
So do you have classes then there at the
At the Berkeley Psych, we teach people chakras.
Mm-hmm.
We have four institutes in California and affiliates as well. And each institute teaches meditation classes, how to sit still and meditate and recognize the edge of your own aura, how to relax, how to reduce stress, how to rejuvenate the body, how to be still and just know and listen. And then we teach healing classes as well.
So people have had no experience in it then, really? They can start from scratch? Or
We call it psychic kindergarten because we try to keep you in amusement. We realize that if you can laugh at yourself and what's going on with you, you can grow spiritually. You can progress. And so it's kind of our initiation process, if you will. If you can have some amusement, then you're going to succeed in these classes.
Mm.
And we tell terrible, corny jokes to try to test you.
Excellent.
Well, we know a few of those around here.
Oh, yeah, don't get us going.
Yeah, I could think of a few. Your station letters must raise an incredible amount of jokes, because one of them that we seem to have farmers and dairy people around me and my family. I come from a farming family, and so one of the things that always seemed to come up was, well, that was just utterly ridiculous.
Right.
That's real corn. That's real corn.
Yeah, we do a lot of that here. The mooing stuff is, some people say it's ad nauseum, but...
mm-hmm.
In fact, let me introduce you to Bossy and Bessie.
Yeah, he really knows how to milk a joke. So it looks like you have ongoing classes during the week. That are they open to anybody?
Yes, anyone can come in and apply, and it's pretty simple. Generally speaking, if someone comes in, they're probably ready.
Mm.
But we have they talk to our director and get explained, kind of what the class is about, and they see if it fits their spiritual needs, and we let anyone come in. It's we don't have any religious, prejudices. In other words, you don't have to be in a certain belief system. You just have to be wanting to learn and open to this level of spiritual communication.
Now, you did mention that you saw a Christ energy.
Yes.
So it was that your own interpretation of that vision, like somebody else would have had a different interpretation? Or?
That's awfully hard for me to determine. But the first one I had was in 66. This was in December. Actually, it was December 24th. I was driving down Highway 5. I'd say about 10 cars stopped to look at this.
Oh.
Even my husband said, that it looked like the Christ, but boy, that was somebody did a pretty good light show up there. And he spent the rest of the trip trying to figure out what kind of lights were used to create a Christ.
Wow.
That one was pretty real. The second one, which was in my home in the country, was very visually clear to me as a Christ figure. I did choose to go into a Christian religion as a child. At 12, I made a decision. My family were agnostics, and I made a decision to go check out the local church. And that was where I had tremendous experiences as a kid on what I would have called then a very religious level. So, yes, I do come to this with a background, although I broke away from the church after about age 15, and then came back to it this way.
Hmm.
Do you do any past life work there?
Yes, I do. It's part of every reading that we do. We do aura readings, I think, 5 or 6 times a week at Santa Rosa Institute. We have an institute on 516 Sonoma Avenue, and we've been there on that location since the early 80s, and we've been in Sonoma County since 1975 as a center. And we do. Every reading we do is past life readings. We look at your high life. In other words, we all have come to this incarnation with experience before, and the only reason we read your past life is to show you what information you're working off of now, what your past life is teaching you. And it's basically like a data bank that you need for today to work off of.
So it's really a tool as well. It's how would you call it?
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Or your little psychic tool bag.
You're right.
perhaps whatever is coming up for you in the way of a past life, it would seem as though there's some resonance, perhaps, for you in this life, a reason to look at that story.
Usually there is. I don't find too many situations where the people we read find that it doesn't resonate. And often, what we do is we read the past life and we say, well, the reason that this is lit up now is because you need to draw this part of the information from that past life into this life to learn something about that. That's always fascinating to me as a reader, to see what they're working off of and what information they're downloading from, say, the Akashic Records, which is another data bank, but which basically is like a library that holds all of your information. But we pick and choose. It's like going to the library and picking a book. We do it unconsciously. It's like you want to change careers and you're going down a certain path. Well, that past life in which you were that, say you want to be a nurse, maybe that past life shows up to show you where to go, how to go along that path.
How do you draw that out of somebody, unless there's secret techniques or whatever, what is the process to...
A good question. Clairvoyance is a process of seeing what is there already in front of you. And it's one of our abilities is to draw out of, say, you. If you wanted to be an aura reader, I would teach you how to look in somebody's aura to find the past life information. And it's astonishing. You know, the process is sometimes very magical and a bit mystical at times. It's like, wow, I've watched brand new beginning clairvoyant students that have just never really... had much training, sit down, and they do a few of our simple techniques, and all of a sudden they just nail somebody on a past life that is so clear to them and true to what they're doing today, it astonishes everybody. It's like, where did you get that? Well, all I did was follow these simple five techniques that, we teach them, and then bingo, it shows up. And it's like a TV screen when you're doing a reading. The actual appearance of the information is like shows up in front of you. Unfortunately, it's really simple. I'd like to make it really complicated, but it's why we call it kindergarten. It's three simple little steps, and for some people, they just sort of pop open to seeing.
What about the other people?
It takes about 3 weeks.
Okay.
It takes 3 weeks to 3 months, and... takes about 3 weeks to 3 months. And by the end of 3 months, usually the frustration period is over and they've decided to give up fighting what they see and just let it happen.
Yeah. Wow.
there's this whole government thing that's been going on for a long time. The government spent millions of dollars training people to see beyond walls and all this stuff.
They
got fancy names for it. And, they paid Stanford University millions of dollars to stick pins in people and figure out if they're psychic. And I find it so insulting because because from where I come from, I've just been taken down a different path that doesn't involve testing people. Hmm. And I have talked to some of the people that have had this government training, and most of them really are in kind of desperate need of healing. They've kind of been done to, if you will.
Trying to squeeze it into a mechanistic system that doesn't quite fit.
Yeah, you know, they're figuring out how to put spirit in a bottle, and they will.
alcohol.
Yes.
You know where to go.
Now, this may be not a silly question, but what is the difference or the nuances between clairvoyance and psychic healing?
You don't have to be clairvoyant or to have it developed to do psychic healing, because psychic healing is a completely different activity.
Hmm.
It is where you allow energy, and the way we teach it, I put it this way, you allow energy of another entity, and we call them healing masters, to come into your hands. And the way we teach it is it's a very you're separate from the entity, because the only part that is impacted are your hands.
Hmm.
And so that healing master comes into your hands. Now, for some people, they're able to also turn on what's called clairaudience, which is in the throat, and that's the ability to hear spirit talking. And it's a telepathic thing. There's no, you know, this physical sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's all telepathic. And they will talk to their healing masters, and the healing masters will tell them what's going on with the person that they're healing. So if I was waving my hands around in front of your aura, my healing master would be doing what they do. And I may or may not be able to listen to the story.
Mm.
Can I ask, if you are clairaudient, does that preclude, are some people clairvoyant or clairaudient, and there's one or the other, and some people don't really see things but hear things, or?
Yes, I would say some people have a predisposition for seeing, and some have a predisposition for hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say at a keener level.
Keen.
Uh-huh. You know, it's like more sensitive to seeing than hearing, or more sensitive to hearing than seeing. For instance, I'll give you an example. I have some friends that are, you might appreciate this, is that I have a friend that's in the radio business, and mm-hmm. he listens to the sounds and is exceedingly sensitive on this level. Has even, you know, does things like installs transmitters and stuff like that. Has actually worked in and out of radio stations all over the Sonoma County area. And he hears things I don't hear. He has a physical hearing ability as well as a telepathic ability.
Huh.
And so, every time we've ever talked about sound, he hears things I don't hear. And he's also very clairaudient. In terms of that, and I don't know that his clairaudience is better than his clairvoyance, but I know that it's a lot keener than mine. So I can tolerate dissonant sounds and discordance, and he can't tolerate it at all. He has to have the finest sound system on the planet, or he, you know, gets irritated.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a fine-tuned level of what I would call clairaudience, people that, you know, have sensitivity in their physical ears as well as their spiritual ears.
Right. Now, it seems, I think I was talking before with Bird Lee, that it seems like that nearly everybody you speak to, somebody in their family does have, you know, Auntie, you know, Sadie used to do something, or Uncle Phil or whatever. It seems like without thinking, it seems like it's here amongst us. Every family has people who do it.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And it's usually the secret. You know, people don't want to talk about it. And the reason is, historically, we just burned them at the stake.
Yeah, not so safe.
You know, just get rid of those people. They're just too weird, and I can't control them, and I don't know, they can't get any money out of them, and so, you know, it's not a commodity that you can use in the marketplace, generally speaking. I mean, so society has, for years, mostly because of the behavior of churches, that we just get rid of them. So people have always been real quiet about it. I talked to some people. I've been to the Philippines and all over the world, and I've talked to people about this topic, and I'll see a group of people, an ethnic group, and I'll say, your people are very, very sensitive, very psychic. You see things, and then they'll talk about it. And so it's, yeah, and everybody has something, somebody really special in their family that knew things. Or maybe they read the cards, or maybe they just were the person that everyone went to for advice. And, you know, we always go to so-and-so because she seems to know what's right. And often that involves a psychic ability.
Well, where do you kind of draw, where is the line between someone who is highly intuitive and someone that you would consider a psychic? Is there
Wow, that's difference? A really good question, because I'm a professional psychic. In other words, I've decided to live my life this way as who I am and what I do. I gave up the other part of the world. I've got, you know, a journalism degree. I've got a teacher's credential, and I gave all that up, to basically, in terms of, you know, that level, because I just really want to do this for my life, and I have a mission, I have a calling. Now, so I want to say there's a professional level of psychic, but you know what? I have never met a salesman or a very successful businessman that's not highly intuitive.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just focused into that.
They
that
listen
way.
And they follow their intuition and they go for it. They don't, they don't hesitate when for what they know is right. And maybe they don't really have a really good intellectual answer for why they're making that step or doing that thing, but they follow their gut. You know, you can look at some of the most famous people on the Ted Turner, example.
Yeah.
People don't like him, but man, who's the guy who runs Apple computers? Gates. Another man who...
Yeah, Intel.
I'm telling
Jobs,
you about men because I'm...
Jobs,
Steve Jobs, yeah. People like that are just... they just didn't quit once they got on a roll with doing intuitively what they thought they should be doing. It just...
Yeah.
They just got there. And that's pretty powerful. That's very highly intuitive.
Yeah.
You know, Ross Perot said something that really struck me years ago. He said he went and did a speech at Harvard Business School, and it was at their graduation.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he complimented the administration in his speech, and he said, I want to commend you for attracting some of the most intelligent, brightest young people on the planet to your business school. He says, but, you know, I want to admonish you for what you do to them when they get here.
Ooh.
Yeah, in those words. And he said, you do not teach them how to use their intuition in business.
Mm.
And I lit up like a Christmas tree because I went, I could teach them. I could teach them how to open their intuition.
Or at least to acknowledge it and recognize it, and that it's a gift, and that it's valuable, and... That would be a great 101, intuition 101.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, really. I mean, I think we're happier when we follow what we're supposed to do and when we listened to where we're supposed to be.
And it's also a feminine attribute, you know. I would think, you know... Men have a way of not wanting to have feminine attributes, you know, so it's even more of an unacknowledged or You know, it's the same way when you say it's, you keep your psychic abilities secret because it's not accepted, or you tend to keep it close to the vest.
Mm-hmm.
But with men, you know, that to be an intuitive is like, oh my God, I'm gay. I don't know. You know, it's just one of those cultural sort of things. Mm-hmm.
In fact, is there a difference between the sexes in terms of psychic ability?
No, there's no difference. But the only difference I've noticed is that women tend to be braver in coming forward to explore their abilities.
Mm.
And men sometimes come to it kicking and screaming because some woman nudged them in the right direction. Not always, but for instance, our numbers, we have about 4,000 graduates of our intensive clairvoyant training program over the last 35 years.
Mm.
That's not a very large number, really. We've graduated probably 50,000 from our meditation and healing classes. And
wow.
So, and the percentages are 75% women.
Hmm.
So, and we were founded by a man and pretty much all a male-directed board of directors. So it's not because the head of the organization was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that role until my husband died 15 years ago. And so, you know, that's where I stepped into that place. But it hasn't changed. The numbers really haven't changed. Once in a while, they'll shift to more men. Every now and then, we'll get a blip on the chart. But and we do see an increasing number, actually. But it's pretty much remained about 75, 30, maybe 70, 35.
And now, who was the woman behind Lewis, the founder? Was there a woman behind him?
Well, his daughter worked with him in the very beginning to create the business plan. And then I came along. It was founded in 1973.
Hmm.
And it was in May of 1973 that I walked in the door.
Okay.
So that would be me.
You were Johnny on the spot, yeah.
I was called.
Yeah.
that.
Now, of course, in the world in generally, you know, often there's a lot of scoffing involved. You know, say like if you're late for a meeting, you said, oh, you should have known, you know, you were going to be late type of thing. You know, do you get a lot of that?
Oh, I do. You know, I have to laugh at that a lot, you know. And, you know, It's a game called Prove It that I just sort of back away from.
It gets boring.
Yeah, I leave that to the scientists to play with that, because I have to just go with where I am right here and right now and present time. What's happening right now and do the best I can in the position.
Exactly.
And I'm glad you're doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
It's very valuable.
Now, you've got a big psychic fair coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can tell us what's happening on that.
It's really fun. We do one a month, and we have them in all four of our locations. It's the 24th and... Am I getting the dates right? It's
24th and 25th, yeah.
24th, 25th, yeah. And
Arnold, you must be psychic.
I have my reading glasses on so I can read the print.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun. We do past life readings, we do family readings, we do love life readings, relationship readings, baby being readings. That's really fun.
Baby what?
Baby being.
Baby
and
being.
They're little spirits, and they're not very little.
So if you're pregnant, you mean? Have you got a bun in the oven kind
mm-hmm.
of thing?
And, and people who don't have one in the oven and who want to have, or who, especially young women who are really highly creative. And a lot of times their creative projects are just all not working or not moving, but they've got this intense amount of energy. And they'll come in and we'll say, well, you know what, why don't you go get a baby being reading over there? And all of a sudden the reader will discover, you know, that there's 14 baby beings sitting in their aura going, don't create that art project. Create me.
Wow.
And it's a real dilemma for a lot of young women is they let the clock is ticking at the same time. They've got this creative energy that they want to use, and And we're hounded as women by these baby spirits. There
can you get
so
a,
many...
a baby being out of me or something?
Yeah.
I mean, is that what you guys...
we do.
Because 14, standing in line there, that could be a kind of a logjam.
Wow.
It is.
Wow, yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Huh.
Especially as someone who never had a baby. Mm-hmm. Never did that. However, I'm a very creative person, and I have had to deal with, creative blocks. So maybe that's what they were, yeah. Those creative blocks.
The baby blocks.
Little baby shaking their little red fists at me.
You didn't hear the clock ticking.
What's wrong with you?
You promised me five lifetimes ago that you would give me a body. I'm calling in my chip.
Oh, no, it's really like that. They're literally lined up. Take a number.
You could come in and teach the classes with us. You've got the right
style. Right stuff. Well, it seems like perhaps you could get them to be on your side, even if they weren't going to get to, you know, actually make an appearance in this lifetime, that perhaps you could sign them up to, have a little job.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, that's a good idea. It sometimes does work that way, but most of the time they're so bent on getting a body that's just what they want. And so they
so what
become
do you
the
do?
Irritation factor.
Uh-huh. How do you get them to,
go
look
away?
The other way?
Mm-hmm.
Is that...
Well, there's devious little tricks like...
uh-huh. Take them out for ice cream and then run.
There are people who really want a baby and... they're not getting pregnant, so we try to send them off to the...
Yeah.
I'm really trying to conceive parking lot. Or
Well, that... It's almost like a new page in the...
Yeah, well, that's the job I would give them. It's like, go to work on these women that are really working on conceiving. Get over there and make it happen.
Mm. Yeah, there's plenty to go around,
Yeah, over there.
Hooking people up with the right thing. Hooking those little spirits up with... people that are just willing and able and for a partnership like that.
Yeah.
So you really can separate things. You can have relationship, do it from relationships and work situations.
Yes.
You really can zero in on really
we
different
do.
Situations.
Uh-huh. And in the psychic fairs, we do career readings, relationship readings, baby being readings, all levels of looking at and family readings. You could get a family reading without bringing your family in the door. We could take a look at why did you choose your mother, father, brother, sister, and usually there are spiritual lessons with every single one of those. So that's really we just focus on that alone. So you can come to the psychic fair and find out about why did I choose my mother.
Right. Kind of how on a, if there is a typical kind of how I chose my mother type thing, what would that be?
Well, let's see. We usually are learning lessons from the past. In other words, one of the rules of spiritual evolvement and reincarnation is that whatever you didn't finish last time, you come back and try to finish again. And if you don't do it this lifetime, you got to go do it again. And so some people call it karma, but it's really life lessons. And let's say that my life lesson was to learn to forgive the inadequacies and what one might call the failures of our parents towards us. And let's say that I stayed angry at my mother or my father my whole life and went, those sons of guns did it to me and they blah, 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 and they ruined this part of my life. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I stay in that vibration and then I die,
right,
I'm going to have to come back and figure out how to finish because I didn't finish very good with them.
In fact, even going further away from it, even.
Uh-huh. I didn't understand that maybe my mother and my father came from an alcoholic situation or an abuse situation that caused them not to have the knowledge and the data and the information to treat me well.
Mm.
So until I can get to that vibration of understanding or compassion, which then leads to forgiveness, I got to come back and do it again with them.
Yeah, so we should just
start forgiving. And a lot of people, when I say that, they go, oh, no, yuck. Yeah, you got to come back with them.
It doesn't go away, yeah.
No, it doesn't go away. And yeah. So spiritually, we're supposed to evolve. We're supposed to take these kinds of leaps of faith, these steps of evolvement to a higher vibration. And, you know, what we offer at the Berkeley Psychic Institute is an opportunity to take that step, at least a little bit of those steps if you want to this lifetime. We have a year-long clairvoyant training program which really goes into this level of, you know, who do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do to reinvent yourself? And what karmic relationships would you like to complete and not have to repeat?
Mm.
So it's a, we call it the intensive clairvoyant program because we go into more than just how to read an aura. It's a lot about you in your evolving as a spirit.
Seems like, I did, you know, I have a radio show at the Guerinville Community Radio Station, and I have a theme every week, and I pick music, play music, and one of my themes a few weeks ago was forgiveness.
Mm. Mm.
And the more I thought about it, the more I thought about what an awesome task is forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, it's so deep that, I mean, we're not talking, you know, forgiving somebody who cut in front of you in line, you know, but people who, you know, you really have deep
mm-hmm.
wounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And, but yet it seems kind of clear that you can't really make much progress without learning forgiveness, and it seems like that would be a really good. I even in my show, I said, "Wouldn't it be great if we had a forgiveness institute?" Because there's so much there.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah, we get so blocked in with that, don't we? Not.
Yeah, yeah, and we're kind of stuck with it.
Yeah.
And sometimes the first person you have to forgive is yourself.
Yep.
Yeah.
For creating the situation that you got yourself into.
Yeah, and that gets tricky, though.
Yeah.
You know, the common thing is, like, it's happening. It's out there. They did it to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just even that, there to be able to find a way to have some kind of concept of how what part you played in the thing, or even just, like, what you were saying about taking a life, being born, so that you can work through this thing that's been hanging you up for lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
And just even to look at it that way, I think is a major healing right there, to be able to say, well, maybe, yeah, I did have something to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's not just out there in just dangling in space.
Yeah. That's a good way of looking at it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So you can help direct people to that goal, then, I suppose.
Yes, we can. And the first, like you said, you said the word wounds, and sometimes when we go to that wound, the first thing we have to do, in a way, is look at how much are we sort of dedicated to maintaining the wound, or how much are we willing to let go of the wound. And if you really do want to release the wound, then you have to go to that vibration of how did it get there? Who's really is it? You know, in symbol, color, vibration, and then the sort of exorcism or extraction of the energy. And it's like a picture that's stuck in the cell of the body. We can teach you how to de-energize that picture so that you can let go of it, because sometimes that's the real issue, is if you are addicted to the drama of the wound, you won't heal. Mm. So our job is to help you find out, first of all, are you addicted to the drama? Okay, well then let's have a good laugh about that first. And see if we can go from there.
Exactly.
That's where the corny jokes come in.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess you've probably got a lot of them there.
We have books of them. They're really awful.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We tell people, if you can't laugh at these corny jokes, you're probably not going to like it here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because some people take things just too seriously and mm-hmm. they forget the whole point of doing it.
Exactly. And if we can rattle your cage a little bit and you can find some amusement, then there's growth. And you know, I learned this in the 80s. I was traveling around the world and I came to a place in Turkey, and it's called Dikili, and there's a healing center there called an Asclepion, and that was the name of them in those places and times. And Asclepius is a god of those, Greek god, that heals at night.
Oh.
And kind of an astral spirit, if you will, that heals people as they sleep. But at the Asclepion itself, it's actually a physical location where they have baths and amphitheaters and healing herbal centers and metaphysicians and all kinds of things. But they don't let anybody in if you can't laugh. And I couldn't believe it. Here I am walking in this ancient ground that's, you know, 5,000 years old, and the guide is telling us about how they had jesters and magicians and musicians at the doorway. And then if you came in really super sick, and it was like a sanitarium, they would dance around and make stupid jokes and try to trick you into laughing. And if you couldn't laugh, they told you couldn't be there. Then you'd have to go someplace else to try to find healing.
Somewhere where they had your sense of humor, maybe?
Yeah, the hopeless case.
Yeah. You know, there's different scores for depending on what you think is funny. Because, you know, there's a lot of movies that I watch that are supposed to be comedies, and I sit there, and I have not cracked a smile. And I'm just, is there something wrong with me, or is this movie just really stupid?
No, they're one of those people who get moved along because they can't.
They can't. Don't know what. Out the door with you.
Yep.
Not funny enough.
Exactly.
Oh, boy. That's interesting, though, that Asclepion thing.
Yes, it is. I was just so fascinated by it. It really tweaked me when I saw that that was...
We should bring them over here. We should have those.
Yeah.
Like in the financial district and stuff. Yeah. Washington, D.C.
Ooh.
Yeah. You get to enter the inner sanctum sanctorum only if you can laugh at this corny joke.
Right. Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
There'd be a few takers, I think.
Yeah. Well, Arnold, you would be like...
I'd be there.
Totally in.
Head of the line.
He's such a great laugher. Yeah.
Oh, dear. So actually, you didn't finish telling us about the fair, actually. Where is it and when is it?
It's 516 Sonoma Avenue,
okay.
Which is right near the corner of Santa Rosa Avenue in downtown Santa Rosa. And we usually have a big sign out in front of the building. And it goes from, I think, 1 o'clock to 6. And you can come in, and I think they have a group of readings, kind of a bargain pack that you can make a contribution for that. And then there's a free aura healing clinic that they do that day. And you can just come on in and experience that kind of a thing.
So what would happen in an aura healing?
They wave their hands around you.
Okay.
They bring in a healing master, a spiritual healing guide. And
this is somebody that's coming in on a psychic way, not somebody they're bringing into their room.
Oh, physically.
It's usually there are students and teachers and staff who've completed our psychic healing classes.
Oh.
And so the public can come into this little circle, and they'll clean the aura, and they'll clean out the energy centers in the body called chakras, and kind of reset your grounding cord and your centeredness. It's like getting a astral shower.
Mm.
They clean out all the different layers of your aura. And a lot of people experience, you know, a sense of relief or relaxation. They don't touch you. They just wave their hands around. And they bring in these healing masters. You can see them go into a light trance as they do this work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, after that, if you want to get a reading, you can, there's any of these varieties. We have men's readings that are just specifically about men's issues and men's energy.
Hmm.
And female readings, they're just about your female creative energy. How are you using it? What are you doing with it? What's stopping it or blocking it? And you get to ask questions, too.
Hmm.
So, and these are about 20-minute readings, and it's just a sampler. We ask a small donation. I think it's $10 or $12 for the reading. And then, of course, there's a bargain pack, so you can get three for a special contribution. But it's
That's
just
good.
A sampler, a way to kind of get in the door and say, well, is this something that I want to experience more?
Hmm.
That
we'll tell you about our meditation and healing classes, and if you're interested in learning to meditate. You know, this is, to me, this is the time that people should really be meditating, because we're doing, it's such a tough economic time.
Right.
It's so hard. And, you know, people really do need to stop and sit still and listen and look and just know what's going on with themselves. Go within and know your own truth. And, you know, it sounds like just kind of a simple byword, but my goodness, people are in such pain these days that it's really, to me, it's time to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Just reassess the world in your own world.
It can't hurt.
Yeah.
Can you do it on a global sense, since it's not a person-to-person thing, but to the, like, to the world or to a group, energy? How is that done?
We do. We actually have our staff meditations or our group meditations where we will work on the energy of the whole planet.
Hmm.
We do a lot of that. For instance, we'll work on the energy of Sonoma County, of Santa Rosa, where we live. We teach people how to do what we call house healings, even.
Hmm.
You know, just to heal somebody's house of spirits or energy or bad vibes, how to reset the energy in someone's living space. So it goes from your personal body and your own aura to the whole planet. And, yeah, we do. We're constantly working on that level of grounding and healing the planet. Even the politicians, even President Obama.
Oh, good.
He is not left out of this energy work that we do.
Yeah, I think those people that are kind of in charge, it's really good to send them some healing energy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't want that job.
No.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Because you literally have to give up so much of yourself inside, I suppose, for that.
I can't even imagine.
Hmm.
Yeah, they need all the help they can get. It's a thankless position, but there are energies that they fight that are not good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got many different names for them, but to say they're
we
negative...
We won't mention any names.
Huh?
We won't mention any names.
No. But let's call them negative, and it's like, for me, that's the best way to go, oh, that's a negative energy hitting the presidency or the government. And so it's an energy that tries to stop the forward, positive, moving things that are going on,
mm-hmm.
and the progressive things, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So we work on just cleaning those little critters out and resetting the energy with, you know, what is, let's say, the intent, the good intent or the highest intent of people in government. Everybody does have a high intent, but some of them are really screwing up, so to speak. They're just blowing it. And so
some are higher than others.
Yes, exactly. And so when you kind of say hello to their highest creative essence, their higher self, sometimes they wake up a little bit and go, oh, maybe I better move in the right direction.
Can acknowledge it. Can you, when you see President Obama, what do you see in that context?
Well, I do see the dichotomy. For me, to read him and to look at where he's going, I see that his intentions are noble. And he is surrounded also by those who believe in his noble intentions and who also believe they are doing the best to put him forward in the right direction to attain them. It's not a perfect picture, mm-hmm. by any means, in that there are those whose own goals and ideals and interests do surpass the higher levels. And I think in any administration you're going to see that. And, I think that there's some misdirection there in that space. But I'm seeing that the direction that he has gone has basically awakened people. Hmm. Whereas I think our previous administration put everyone to sleep.
Right.
And if anything is really, positive about that, is that everyone is on alert to something good happening.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen this in a while. So whether it's another country, they're going, is something good going to happen? Just to have them pose that question. I don't think foreign countries have posed that at all for quite a long time.
Right.
And even ourselves as people, is something good going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little whisper of hope. And I do say it's a little whisper of hope because I see that the situation economically is almost tragic because we're being told things that are not true. But the reality is that it's not getting better.
Right.
I hate to be doom and gloom, but that's what
We can expect a miracle. Have you ever seen that bumper sticker?
Right. Huh?
I love that. There's a bumper sticker. It says, "Expect a miracle."
Yes.
And I think that's a really good idea.
It's a wonderful idea.
Why not?
I agree with you.
It sounds pretty passive, though. We're just waiting for it.
Well, expecting means more than waiting. Expecting means it's going to happen.
Oh, okay.
It's just going to happen.
That's okay, then.
And then you have to kind of think about a little bit, how it's going to happen and visualize it and start creating that it's already happened. And
mm-hmm.
You get that, start putting some good energy.
You're right. There's a downturn economically, and there's a crisis. And in the dictionary, crisis means turning point.
Ah.
And so we're at that place. And you are absolutely right in terms of change, because if you look at the age of Aquarius and you look at the 2012 phenomenon, we're in the midst of tremendous. Look at the green movement and. That's all very positive, very, very positive. It's going to be slow. It is slow, but it's speeding up.
And it's
really
happening.
Really quickly.
Yeah.
And that is going to be our salvation, is that the economy is changing in a very positive way, but unfortunately it's painful for a lot of people right now. That's
right.
The issue.
Yeah, and it's painful for a lot of people who are invested in keeping the old outmoded ways.
You're right.
So, yeah, it's a thing that's happening. But I think we're getting, what's that idea of the tipping point?
Yes.
Or critical mass, where more people than not are focusing on a positive, creative world.
Yes. I think especially, and we have to look to our young people, don't we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In that, they have the bright ideas, the positive outlook, the possibility of change in the future. They're the green gods and goddesses of our planet, if you will.
Yeah.
They will bring us along.
Yeah. Yes. Well, they have that global vision we couldn't have before, the communications we have now.
Yes, they do. They demand it of us. I put myself in the old fogey category.
Exactly.
That we change and that we grow, or we expire quickly and get out of their way.
An elder. We're the elders.
The elders.
Yes.
There we go.
We have a place around the fire.
We do have a place, and that is our intuition, our wisdom as men and women. And, they need that. They really do.
Mm-hmm. We all need each other.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Well, I suppose I should wrap up the interview and...
Did you get back to the ladies in the lake?
Indeed.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah, Bertolini's got a bag packed, so you better give her offline the address. She'll be there on a motor scooter.
Well, maybe we'll see you on the 24th or
25th.
Yes. It would be delightful.
Good. Yes, it does.
We'll be there both days, and we'll have really a good time. We usually have a good crowd of people coming in to receive healings and readings and communication and talk about our classes. So,
and we do this every month?
We do usually once a month, and there are different times of the month, but this month it's the 24th and 25th, from 1 to 6 at 516 Sonoma Avenue. Also, people can go to our website, www.berkeleypsychic.com.
Fabulous.
So,
berkeleypsychic.com, no institute, just berkeleypsychic.
Just berkeleypsychic.com.
Okay. All right.
And that'll take them to our website with all kinds of information.
Okay, good.
Well, fabulous. The Cal's World has been listening to Susan Hull Bostwick of the Berkeley Psychic Institute. And we want to thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us.
Yeah.
You're welcome. This has been fun. Thank you. It's been nice meeting you both.
Nice meeting you.
Great. And we'll have to come down and check out the fair.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Susan.
Have a great night.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.